Hey, it's Francis Lam. Thanks so much for downloading our podcast. This week, we're also bringing you more of the conversation I had with Zoe Ajanyo. She's a chef with a restaurant and cookbook, both called Zoe's Ghana Kitchen, and she's just bowling Londoners over. And she is incredibly charming and is, in fact, the only person to ever answer our standard mic check question of what'd you have for breakfast with an honest reply, coffee and a cigarette. In our show, we talked about the basics of Ghanaian food, but here, we got into why she started cooking in the first place. I hope you enjoy it. So hi, Zoe. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me.
I want to talk to you about Ghana, because you were there when you were a young child. You spent a few years there, but you grew up in London. Your father is Ghanaian and your mother is Irish.
Yeah.
And you learn, before you get to Ghana, you learn to cook Ghanaian food. It seems sort of on your own. Your father didn't really teach you that much. So tell me about how you learned to cook Ghanaian food.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously my introduction to Ghanaian food was through my father. He used to bring home these amazing ingredients, such as kenke, which is fermented maize dough, and banku, and whole tilapia, and the shito, and, you know, lots of exotic things he was bringing home, but he would kind of just cook for himself. So I used to have to prod him a bit to get him to engage with me about letting me understand what that food was. And after a while of nagging, you know, he would let me kind of cook beside him. He wasn't a particularly great cook. He kind of burnt a lot of things, to be honest. But that's where my sort of interest and passion for the food came from, because I realized actually that was his way of connecting to home, which is partly why he didn't really feel like sharing it that much, oddly. But then I thought, well, this is a great route for me to be connected to that part of my culture as well, because we didn't have very much or any really Ghanaian family in London. So whereas my Irish side was quite well established, we went to Ireland very regularly, so I understood that part of my culture and heritage, whereas Ghana was a bit more mysterious to me because my dad was a little bit more mysterious. So and then over the years, I mean, I used to cook with him a bit, and then just I just really loved cooking, I guess. So I cooked a lot as a kid, and I just kept repeating those recipes over and over again, and occasionally I'd cook them for friends and things like that. And the peanut butter stew dish, which is, you know, based on groundnut soup, is something that people nag me about all the time, and it's kind of the dish that launched Zoe's Ghana Kitchen as a business. It got to a point when, you know, after the first year of doing supper clubs and stuff, I had about a whole cache of six recipes that I was sort of trotting out again and again.
And these are the ones that you've been cooking since a child.
Yeah. And then I was like, okay, so I need to expand my repertoire. So, I mean, I'm lucky where I live in East London. I'm very close to a market called Ridley Road, which is a great African sort of market. So there's lots of like West African grocers down there. So I had lots of conversations with the women down there. We call, in Ghanaian culture, we call older women aunties. So I had lots of aunties down Ridley Road who would explain ingredients to me, and I'd ask them questions about how to cook things. So there was some exploration going on there as well. But I really felt like it was important to go back to Ghana for two reasons, actually. I was doing my MA in Goldsmiths at the time in creative writing, and writing about, you know, identity and my relationship with my dad. And then I thought, it's basically kill two birds with one stone, to go home to Ghana and sort of dig out lots of recipes, meet my family, and find out more about where my dad comes from, find out more where I come from, really. And I had this amazing experience because it was such a hospitable place. Aside from the fact I had like 100 relatives greeting me, all of whom, you know, invited me into the kitchen to show me things, like my Aunt Evelyn, my grandma, Mercy. Just traveling around and going into things like chop bars. A chop bar is basically a roadside eatery, a bit like a warung that you'd get in Bali or Indonesia. And people, I would just go in there and eat, and then I'd say, oh my God, that was amazing. Can you show me how to cook it? And people were super, super generous. And yeah, I got access to lots of people's kitchens. You know, it was fantastic. It was such a great trip. I wish I could repeat it. and everything I learned from that trip came back to to inform my cooking at home. And I mean, some of the interesting things about that trip was it kind of gave me a lot of permissions that I wasn't sure I should have sort of at home. Because I mean, a lot of my cooking is reimagining dishes as well, because I mean, I love the traditional stuff, but I'm also all about the flavors, you know, and the ingredients and finding new ways to use them. So before I'd gone back to Ghana, I was kind of just a little bit self-conscious about whether I had license to do that or not, you know. And one of the things I took away from that trip was the fact that in my grandmother's house, three different women showed me three different ways to make jollof, and all of their jollofs was the best jollof, you know, according to them. And then the variances between eating okra soup or light soup in Accra versus eating it in Ho up in the Volta, you know, it just reinforced for me that, okay, people, these dishes do change from region to region, but also from household to household, you know. So there is some license there to reimagine them a little bit and reinterpret them your own way. And then the amount of amazing fresh vegetables and spices, and the commonality of spices that I didn't think would be available in Ghana, things like thyme, just so much fresh stuff, and the taro that inspired me as well in my cooking, because when my dad cooked as a kid, he used a lot of kind of I don't know if this is due to him being a bit not a very expert cook or a bit lazy, but a lot of tinned stuff, you know, so like tinned sardines or things like that. So having access to all this knowledge about how much fresh ingredients and herbs and spices I wasn't expecting to find also kind of sort of just reinforced for me that, yeah, it's okay to use garlic and thyme in some of these dishes, because this is, Kineshi Market has these things, you know.
And someone would have put there anyway. But what are, if you're experimenting, so you're doing this dual thing of learning about the cuisine as it exists in the place and connecting to it and feeling this sort of, you know, feeling it sort of course through you. But
yeah,
as you go back to your home in London and experiment, are there like lines you won't cross? Are there things where you're like, well, I can't do that, or I won't do that because I think that violates the spirit of it or something?
Yeah, I mean, a big one for me is red, because for me, red, it's called red apparently because it's red twice, because of the tomatoes and because it's used with a particular oil, you know, the red oil.
The palm oil, that's super bright.
Yeah, it's very orange and very kind of, again, it has that real earthy taste to it. It's very distinct flavor. But that taste kind of defines red for me, you know. And a lot of people, you know, there's definitely a valid argument about sustainability issues and things like that. But you can find sustainably farmed palm oil. And when you're in Ghana, using it from the source, because you're pounding the nuts to get the oil, you know, so... that's one dish I can't really myself. I'd prefer. I mean, I would never cook it without using zumi or palm oil, because that flavor really defines it. But I mean, it's perfectly acceptable if you're not down with that to use, you know, carotene oil and rapeseed oil. Even is a good substitution. But I mean, in terms of license to experiment, I think there shouldn't be really any restrictions on. How you use these ingredients, because that's the whole point, is to make it as accessible as possible. And the more people you can get using the ingredients in new ways or incorporating them into their daily diet, the better. And it's like, you know, it's for me, it's like, here's a traditional recipe, here are some traditional ingredients, and this is how some people use them. But how about trying to do this and this with them as well, because they're versatile, actually, you know.
Yeah, and in that way, you know, this is how you spread the cuisine. Well, thanks so much for talking with us, Zoe.
No, thank you very much for having me. Pleasure.
Zoe Ajanyo is the author of Zoe's Ghana Kitchen. And she left us with recipes for plantain peanut curry and that magical hot chili paste called shito. You can find them at splendidtable.org.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.